Despite the penalties and the sacks, they arrive tonight 3-0. There goes Hunt, battling for every inch, and finally wrestled to the ground by Monte Nicholson.
That was a good defense we faced today, and honestly, we got a bunch of guys injured up front. Those guys up front still, you know, fought. They made some lanes for me, and I give them all the respect in the world just being able to help me finish the game off.
Our game is so unpredictable on how it's going to potentially unfold. Obviously, a guy like Irvin, you're optimistic about how that he can get you at least until the middle innings and in a position to challenge to win the game. Not something I really feel I can predict. If he's pitching well and, you know, we're looking at fifth, sixth inning and he's still rolling, you're going to probably give him an opportunity to keep going. But it, obviously, in a one-game scenario, he might be a little quicker than normal, knowing that you have fresh arms and we're late in the season and he's 210 innings into the, you know, the season. So you try to prepare as many scenarios as you can. We're just going to have to see what happens once the game begins.
I think we've played some of our best baseball in the month of September. We've pitched well. We've swung the bats well. We've run the bases well. Our defense has been good. So, to me, I feel good about going in. It's a one-game playoff. You know, it really is going to come down to execution of pitches and defense, putting a good swing on a baseball. You know, there's two teams that are going to fight like heck. One of us is not going to move on, but I really like the way we've been playing.
We're just going to try to treat it like we have the whole season. You know, coming here, we played well at home. And I think once, you know, Seve throws that first pitch and we get the game rolling, I think everything will be the same. You know, I think all the build up before the game will be a little bit more nerve-wracking. But I think once you step out there on that field, it's still the same game we've been playing since we were little kids. You know, and we're just going to go out there and just keep competing, keep having fun, and go out there and try to win a ball game.
You can't make mistakes in these games. One little mistake will cost you. And the second thing is have some poise. Your heart rate's going to be up. It's going to be, and there's a lot of build up leading up to the game. It literally is like a game seven. One shot at it. Anything goes. There's going to be a lot of chaos. If one guy gives up a run or starts walking some guys, they're going to go to the bullpen early. Different rosters. It's definitely chaotic.
They've outscored every team in the major leagues from August the 5th on. So they have been a really good offensive team. And from August the 8th on, they've hit more home runs than anybody in the major leagues. When you look at the Twins, their outfield defense is sensational. Their whole defense is demonstrably better than it was at this time last year. And when they run and get it in the outfield, and then they hit a ball over the fence once in a while, they are a very difficult team.
Well, the stuff you have to give to Severino, the experience you have to give to Santana, especially in postseason play. Santana has had numerous postseason outings, a lot of them against New York. Unfortunately for him, they've always been on the losing route, but the experience, Santana, the stuff, Severino.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Lots of baseball in the montage today. Is that indicative of where the show will go? Well, it could very well be because the baseball play-in starts tonight. Yeah, you heard me right. The baseball play-in starts tonight. It is not the playoffs. It will not be the playoffs until you are in a series. I'm going to stick to that mantra no matter what. I've done it for every year since they've had this ridiculous rule that they have. You get to play one single game, and they're calling it, you qualified for the postseason. No. Tonight is the play-in game between the Minnesota Twins and the New York Yankees for the right to play in the playoffs in a real series against the Cleveland Indians. And, of course, the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox in the other American League series. The National League play-in game will be tomorrow night, and we'll talk about that, well, tomorrow. That would be my guess, as Colorado is at Arizona for that one. So welcome to the program. Appreciate you being with us. We are going to talk a little baseball, but we are not going to stop there because there are too many other important things going on all across yon sports world that we want to get into. First of all, how can we not spend a moment or two screaming the four magic words, the highest praise that I can give somebody for tremendous accomplishments on the field of battle? How can we not give the four words, can you and dig and it, to Toledo's own Kareem bleeping Hunt? We didn't hear that very well, did we? That didn't work so well. We're going to try to make that sound a little bit more clear. Kareem Hunt deserves a better can you dig it than that. One more time, Mr. Hunt. That's what I'm talking about. Toledo Rockets product Kareem Hunt is setting the National Football League on fire. in his rookie season. One quarter into his rookie season, four games in, he is doing some historic type things that we'll tell you about coming up in just a bit when we get to our wild stat. But we have to give some credit to Kareem Hunt for a wild game, by the way, last night. Not just the wild stat, which we'll talk about, and not just Kareem Hunt's tremendous performance in this young season so far, but a wild game last night between the Redskins and the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, the NFL's only remaining unbeaten. Who would have picked that? Well, maybe some people. I don't want to make it sound like that's out of the realm of possibility that they would be unbeaten. I just think that perhaps if you would have thought the Chiefs would be unbeaten after a quarter of the season, they might be one of a few teams. I don't know that I would have predicted them to be the only undefeated team left in the National Football League. And what looks to be like a very, very parity-ridden league right now. And again, it's just a quarter in. But there don't look to be look like there are too many juggernauts, you know, in this league right now. There are some bottom feeders that are just flat-out embarrassing, not the least of which being the Cleveland Clowns, also the San Francisco 49ers. Also at 0-4 are the New York Giants and the Los Angeles Chargers. That still sounds weird to say. But I'll tell you what, there just don't look like there are, you know, it doesn't look like there are any teams that are going to be just steamrolling their way, you know, to the Super Bowl, including those 4-0 Chiefs. It looks like a very, very parity-ridden league in the AFC. After 4 weeks now that the Monday Nighter is completed last night, everybody has played for, and I think we start getting into bye weeks this week. Do we not, Jim Cushlin?
Yes, yeah. Week five is usually when they start to get to bye weeks.
So 4 weeks in, four games in, it's really starting to look like there are two pretty good teams that may be the favorites in the AFC, and those would be those undefeated Chiefs and probably the 3-1 Steelers. Oh, get blasphemy, you say. What? How are you not saying the Patriots? Well, are you watching the Patriots these days? Tom Brady's Patriots are 2-2, and this had nothing to do with Tom Brady turning 40. Anybody who wants to try to play that game, stop. You just turn around and walk away. Don't watch sports anymore. This is not Tom Brady. Suddenly, Bill Belichick's hallmark defense in New England is just getting eaten alive. The Patriots have surrendered the second highest point total in the AFC through 4 weeks. Only the Colts are worse, having given up 136 points in four games. The Patriots next at 128. Now, does that mean all is lost in New England? No, it doesn't, especially when you consider that the Patriots are the highest scoring offense in the AFC. They're 129 points, besting 122 put up by those Chiefs. So they're the highest scoring team in the AFC, but they have the second worst scoring defense in the AFC, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. I will give them, by the way, just all kinds of credit talking about the Patriots offense simply because, you know, we know what happened. We know about all of the injuries. We know what happened to Edelman. We know Gronk is not fully healthy. We know the running game is, you know, changing over. And yet they continue to just pump out points. It really is an amazing thing with Tom Brady at the helm. But they're 129 to 128 in terms of points scored and points allowed. Far from a juggernaut they be. I think you have two teams that you can say are legitimate AFC Super Bowl contenders one quarter of the week into the season, the Steelers and the Chiefs. And depending on what they can get from Trevor Siemian, the defense of the Denver Broncos might make them a third team that you could say is a real contender. The AFC South, I think, is pretty brutal. The Texans are the best of the bad of a, you know, pretty mediocre bunch. If Deshaun Watson continues to develop and turn in Michael Jordan-esque games like he did last week or 2 days ago, maybe we'll have something to talk about. Nobody in the East, because I don't think the Buffalo Bills at 3-1 are a legit contender. They're just 3-1 to start the season, and we'll just kind of leave it at that. I just don't think there's too much else there. And in the National Football Conference, well, I mean, let's, again, be honest. First of all, there's nobody undefeated. Your 3-1 teams include the Rams, who look like they're for real, the defending NFC champion Falcons, who the Lions almost beat on a dubious call at the end of the game 2 weeks ago. The Panthers are also 3-1. The Lions and the Packers are both 3-1, as we know, and then there's the Philadelphia Eagles, who are the true contenders there. A little bit harder to pinpoint because of the parity. I really see a lot of good things in the Eagles, but a lot of serious flaws. I see some very good things in the defensive-minded, suddenly, Detroit Lions. But obviously some flaws. I think the Packers have a pretty underwhelming roster, and Aaron Rodgers is carrying them in many ways to their 3-1. I think the Panthers are a little bit, they're a little bit of a mirage. You think you see what you see up ahead in the desert, and then when you get there, it's not real. I don't think they're real. I think Cam Newton put up a tremendous performance against Tom Brady. I don't think what he did against New England this past week will be the thing that he does week in and week out. He just has, I just don't think, you know, since his MVP or 2 years ago, I just don't think he's going to be that consistent. I think Atlanta has a pretty good shot of being one of the contenders, and I think the Rams, they might be for real. They've scored a league-high 142 points. Jared Goff, suddenly with an offensive-minded coach, is putting up tremendous numbers after a rookie season to forget, primarily under Jeff Fisher last year. So if I had to pick a handful of teams in the NFC, it's a lot harder. But I would say probably still the Packers in the NFC North with the Lions nipping at their heels, probably the Falcons, and then the Rams and the Eagles kind of on the cusp. So a really interesting look, and there are power rankings galore. We'll update those a little bit and kind of maybe get your thoughts on those as well. But the big story for me in the National Football League, and not just because we're sitting here talking on Toledo Sports Radio, but Kareem Hunt, the Rocket product, is just dynamic. Running the ball, catching the ball out of the backfield, doesn't matter. He does it with a flair. He does it with a burst of power inside, breaking through guys. He's a little undersized in terms of height, which you know. So it's hard to get a good hit on him. So he uses that power to get under the pads of some guys. And then some really, really, you know, quick, instinctive moves to avoid and evade tacklers. In order to get big gains. And Kareem Hunt is just, you know, looking like maybe he should have been the first back taken in this past draft, Kush.
He very well could have been. And it's starting to look like he should have been. I mean, it's kind of amazing, you know, what he's been doing, you know, so far. And I'm loving every second of it, personally.
The real, and we'll give the wild stat in a moment. This is another wild stat, however, about Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt has rushed for more yards in the second halves of his four games than any other NFL running back has run for in the four games.
That's pretty crazy right there, yeah.
That's. I mean, that could be our wild stat. 397 yards rushing for Kareem Hunt, the NFL's rushing leader, in just the second halves of his four games. 397. Nobody else has run for 397 yards in 4 weeks. So that's just a pretty amazing thing to think about there, too. He's just doing tremendous work, and I'm just very, very happy to see that for the former Toledo Rocket. So a little bit of NFL there. Kind of another story out of the NFL that is not really necessarily localized. You know, it's not a Lions story or a Brown story or anything of that nature, but it's just interesting because you're talking about, you know, two of the best players in football for one of the best teams in football that is supposed to be a Super Bowl contender, and I'm talking about the Steelers. Antonio Brown threw a temper tantrum on the sideline during the Steelers' win over the Ravens on Sunday, and he flipped over a Gatorade jug and was just demonstratively complaining and throwing his arms up, furious that Ben Roethlisberger didn't find him, didn't find him, on a double move on a play that he felt like it was just a touchdown. It was a play, and I can't remember the quarter. Second quarter. It was the second quarter. Brown broke free on a double move. Roethlisberger was reading on the other side of the field and threw short underneath to Le'Veon Bell, and it was incomplete. And Brown, who was wide open, was livid. And he let everybody know it on the side. He let everybody not only on the sideline, he let everybody in the stadium know it with his ranting and with his raving and with his flipping of the water bottle. Ben Roethlisberger was asked about that on his radio show in Pittsburgh, and he said he's very disappointed in AB 84 because this is pretty much a temper tantrum, and in fact, it's more than a temper tantrum, and it's creating a distraction that we shouldn't have to deal with. He said, I don't want to call him out. This isn't calling him out, but he knows better than that. He is superhuman on the football field, and when that happens, it almost brings him back to being a mere mortal. Because he gets in his head and messes with all of us a little bit. Not trying to call him out. I just think this is a distraction that none of us really need. Mike Tomlin, the Steelers head coach, had to deal with this distraction as well.
You know, AB is a competitor, and we all know and understand that. It aids him, it aids us, but we got to control it.
He has to control it. If he does not, it could work against him. It could work against us. Those are just the lessons you learn along the way. Sunday was a big game, obviously for a lot of reasons. Emotions are capable of getting away from you. It doesn't need to happen. It shouldn't happen. Hopefully it won't move him forward. Hopefully he's learned a lesson through that. Hopefully others have learned a lesson through that.
I have called out receivers for being divas for a long, long time in this league, and not the least of which is, of course, Odell Beckham. And, Kush, you saw that he was punished by the league and by the Giants for his dog hydrant act 2 weeks ago. And his constant need for attention and his constant need, well, diva. I mean, you know, it's Terrell Owens and you know, Randy Moss and Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco, that is. And there's, it's just a diva position. And I guess it's okay if you're just constantly making big plays and you're constantly helping your team win. And make no mistake about it, Antonio Brown is maybe the best receiver in football. He has led the league for the last 3 years overall in receiving yards and receptions, and is up there in the top five or so in touchdowns. He is just a beast, and his combination, his chemistry with Ben Roethlisberger is almost second to none. But there comes a point where when your quarterback, who, again, does not want to call you out, essentially is calling you out, you become counterproductive. Why is it that wide receivers continue, you know, to cause as many headaches for their teams, a lot of them anyway, as they do highlights for their teams, like Beckham, and now like Antonio Brown, who I think is going a little too far here? I have great respect for the A.J. Greens of the world. I have great respect for the Julio Jones of the world. I see their production. I marvel at their highlights. And I don't hear any of their mouths. And I don't see any of their gesticulations. And I don't see flags costing their team 15 yards. I don't see their quarterbacks having to explain to the media what's wrong with their chemistry with their superstar receiver. So there are some that are just, you know, beyond all of that. But, boy, it just continues to seem like generation after generation, or in football parlance, you know, every 5-6 years when the new breed of wide receiver takes over at the top, the ones at the very top are the ones who are just divas beyond belief. And there comes a point where you just got to shut up and play the game and go back to the huddle and say, Ben, dude, you missed me, instead of telling the whole stadium and thus the whole world by way of social media and GIFs of your Gatorade jug flip, how you felt about it. I just wonder why they do that, Kush.
Because this is one of those no fun league part things coming back into play with so many other issues the NFL has to deal with right now. Here we are, you know, talking about this.
What are you talking about, though? I mean, it's not about fun.
I mean, this was
a
little
celebration thing. I'm talking about just the team destroying sideline temper tantrum, basically telling everybody my quarterback missed me, and I'm ticked off,
yeah,
and
that's,
I'm not
going to
get my catch and my stats on this one. I don't think this has anything to do with the fun league.
No, you're right. I was still thinking about what you were, you know, with the Beckham thing for before. But yeah, that part, that just shouldn't happen.
They're,
and that's
divas.
A bad,
I mean,
that's
guys.
A bad look. That's a bad look.
I mean, it really, really is. And you know, really, it really bothers me because I like AB. I like the fact that he's Mac. You know, when you talk about some of these guys rising to be the very best in their position at their positions in the National Football League, which I think you can make a very serious case that Antonio Brown is, and he comes from the MAC. I like that. It's a great thing, and I don't like the negative. It's kind of like Kareem. I'm not saying he's the best running back in football. Not saying that yet. But Kareem Hunt is leading the National Football League. He's leading the league in rushing. And so that's a great thing. Kareem Hunt with 502 total yards. Nobody else, like I said, has 397, which he has run for just in the second halves of alone. He's got 502 yards rushing. He's a MAC player. Antonio Brown, as I mentioned, well, he went into this week leading the league in receiving yards. And now he's trailing Stephon Diggs of Minnesota by 391 to 380. That's probably why he's mad. He wanted his stat moment there, you know. But I just kind of like seeing these guys do well. You know, he's a Central Michigan product. You know, Kareem is a Toledo product. I just want to see these guys do well, and I want to see them represent well. So Just among those things. All right. So those are just some NFL observations from last night. I've gotten more from the game last night that I want to talk about, but I'll wait until after the bottom of the hour and the Sports Center, because it's going to be getting away from the game more, and it's going to be getting into more of the social stuff. And specifically, I want to talk about it because of the Lions. What I mean by that is that there was at least one Detroit Lion that is sharing the mail that he has received from fans about protests during the national anthem. The kneeling or the black power fists or whatever the case might be. Amir Abdullah is sharing some of the letters on Instagram that he received from fans who weren't real happy. And, of course, it shows a divide. It shows some ugliness. It shows some real cynicism. And I think it's there's a reason why he's sharing it. And the reason why he's sharing it is because the discussion must be had. So we're going to do that a little bit coming up in just a bit. Also, last night, two Chiefs players did not kneel during the national anthem, but sat in a more disrespectful display of the flag and everything that the flag stands for. They sat during the national anthem. That also was not very well received by fans. And we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. All right, so I want to get into all of those things. And then, of course, as I mentioned, baseball galore coming up as well, because the wild card play-in game is tonight. In the American League, the Twins at the Yankees. Who do you like? Who do you got? We're going to talk to Chris Cotillo of MLBDailyDish.com at about 4:10 with a preview of that game, and also maybe just kind of an advanced look at the start of the series on Thursday between the Indians and the winner of this game tonight. And how about this, Kush? It was just announced about an hour, less than an hour ago. Trevor Bauer gets the game one start in the ALDS for Terry Francona and the Indians. So we're going to talk to Chris Cotillo about that. We'll get back to college football at about 4:40 with Coach Mike Jinks of Bowling Green. Also in the next hour, sometime between 4:20 and 4:30, be listening for your cue to call. You could win the tickets European Vacation. You can get online more information, and you can register there as well at 1065theticket.com. But if you want to fly out to Europe, courtesy of your friends here in Toledo, particularly at ESPN 1065 The Ticket, we'll have another opportunity to qualify for that. And so much more. So we got a Sports Center coming up right after we give you your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
I gave you one wild Kareem Hunt stat. I'll give you another one now. Kareem Hunt, last night in the Chiefs' win, he went for 101 yards with another 20 yards receiving, so 121 total on the night. That's a fourth straight game to start his career that he has accumulated at least 100 total yards from scrimmage. That's the fourth, makes him just the fourth NFL player ever to accomplish that feat. The other three, pretty dang good company. LaDainian Tomlinson, Hall of Famer of the 2000 Chargers, Adrian Peterson of the 2007 Vikings, and Billy Sims of your 1980 Detroit Lions. So Kareem Hunt in great company there. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We'll check out a Sports Center coming up next. We'll come back and get into the NFL, or excuse me, the MLB play-in game. We'll talk a little bit about the NFL's protest situation that was advanced last night. Tell you about more about Amir Abdullah and his story as well as we continue right here on the Extravaganza.
6-5. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
So are you, well, first of all, are you looking for a great place to watch football? You know the answer to that. I mean, why do you even ask? If you're looking for a place to watch football, you go to B-Dubs, Buffalo Wild Wings, because they have gone above and beyond to turn every Buffalo Wild Wings location into football heaven. That's right. Countless taps and HD screens in place. The entire atmosphere committed to creating the perfect place for watching football, food and drinks included. In fact, that's why they brought up the classic menu item, the 35th Wex Sandwich. Check it out. And also, for a limited time only, the Blue Moon Barbecue Sauce available at Buffalo Wild Wings as well. There's more, but you got to come in and watch games to find out what it is. The best place, bar none, with the best football experience is Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Please drink responsibly. All right, if you're watching the wild card game tonight, I'm curious, do you consider this, and I know baseball is going to go out of the way to make it look it like it is, and they're going to put it on the screen as such, and they're going to have the announcers talking about the playoffs, this outside of the actual playoff promotion by Major League Baseball and the networks, do you consider this to be a playoff game? I do not. I consider baseball to be a sport of series. It has been from April 1st, or whatever the first day of the season was, until now. It's a sport of series. There are no one-game series in baseball. Nobody just says, we're going to have one game unless you're making up a rainout game from another time and you got to go to a city and play one time and then leave. That's it. You play series in baseball. When you get to the postseason, you play a playoff series against another team in baseball. That's why I don't believe you can call this a playoff game. This is a play-in game to get into a playoff series. So Minnesota has, you know, this dubious distinction now of being the first team in baseball history to lose over 100 games in 1 year and come back to qualify for the postseason the next year. It really is quite a turnaround. They were 51-54 or 54-57, now it's escaping me, but on August 1st they were three games under 500. And they turned it around somehow and had such a great second half, and by the way, still got blown away by the Indians, but had such a great second half that they qualified for this game. But to me, they didn't qualify for the postseason. They qualified for the right to play into the playoffs. They get to play against another team that finished second and play into the playoffs. Now, if this was even a miniseries, Jim, if this was even a best out of three, two mm-hmm. out of three, I would be fine with that.
Yeah.
In the same way that you have three-game series all throughout baseball, you know, every single, you know, for 6 months.
Yep.
I would be okay with that, too. Would it push everything back a little bit? Yeah, it would. But you know what? That's just par for the course. If it's going to be a little tougher to win the World Series coming from the wild card if you have to play a three-game series just to make the five-game series. But again, that's what this is. When baseball went ahead and expanded to the two wild cards, to me, if you're really calling them playoff teams, then you have to make them play a playoff series. Do you agree with having just a one-game series? Do you like this?
I mean, I'm in agreement with you on the how it truly should be. A one game. The only time in baseball, not counting a game five or a game seven, where it all comes down to one singular game, should only be those game 163 tiebreakers. That's it. And first of all, I always tip my cap to baseball because every other sport uses a convoluted tiebreaker system to figure out those kind of things. Baseball says, no, you play one more on the field. That's the only time I've truly ever agreed with one game playoff in baseball, but that's not what these are. So yes, they will claim and go in all the record books as an official playoff game, but it still feels more like a play-in game, as you've been pointing out. I've been the type of person who's been a proponent of somehow making this a best two out of three, best of three kind of series for this. I've also been a proponent for quite some time, even before the wild card, incidentally, that the division series needs to be best of seven, not best of five, but that's another story. So, yeah, I know it'll go in all the record books as an official playoff game, and things like the dubious twin stat that you pointed out that we had as one of our wild stats last week, I believe. Yeah, that's all going to technically be true. But it's still baseball, and it feels like one singular game shouldn't be the entirety of a playoff series. It needs to be at least best two out of three. Though on the flip side, I will say I do like the concept of you don't win your division, well, roll the dice in the one game. We have the unbalanced schedules for a reason. That's it, putting all the emphasis on winning your division. I still agree with that principle.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, you know, the big thing for me is it's a 162-game season.
Yeah.
You cannot advance in the playoffs in one game.
Right. So many quirky things could happen in a single
metric. If you play a football season of 16 games, I can see one-game playoff. That makes perfect sense. One game before you advance mm-hmm. or you're out. Even in basketball. They have 82 games. They don't have a single a playoff game to advance into the next round of or what would be the first round of the NBA playoffs. If you play 82 doggone games, you get a series in the playoffs
yep.
before you get knocked out or you advance. Baseball doubles that at 162, roughly, double anyway.
Close
they're going to send somebody home based on nine innings?
Yeah.
It just does. It's so counterintuitive. I can't stand
it. And this AL wildcard game tonight is really in theory, stark example of this, because by all paper, you know, on paper measurements and metrics you can have, the Yankees are the better team. And if it was any kind of series, whether it's 2 out of 3, 3 out of 5, 4 out of 7, whatever, then the Yankees would most likely in 90-some-odd% of scenarios you could dream up would win that series. But something quirky could happen tonight, you know. Maybe some of those young twins go off on Severino early and they somehow and Santana, who has some playoff experience, could go through the order of the Yankees a couple times, and suddenly you're in the late innings and the Twins could be the one advancing. That wouldn't happen necessarily if it was a best two, at least just 2 out of 3. And I know for baseball, the big reason they aren't really receptive to that idea still of making this wild card round, an actual round, not just a game, is the excuse you'll get mostly is, well, then all the division series teams, instead of almost a week off, well, then they'd have to be off for a full week.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
The excuse you'll, I'm just saying, that's the excuse you'll hear from Major League Baseball people when this question would come up.
But you know what, and maybe for some of them, they'd be like, good, we deserve that full week off. We deserve that time because we've got a Michael Brantley who needs to heal up, that kind of a thing. You know, if you're just to give an example, you know, Brantley's on this roster, by the way, as essentially a pinch hitter. He's not going to play any outfield,
right,
or play any significant innings. He's just going to be a pinch hitter, which is an interesting choice, by the way, for Terry Francona. But yeah, I mean, you got guys who are banged up. You got guys who need to rest a little bit. That's part of the, you know, part of the benefits, I guess, if you will, of being one of the top two teams, where you don't have to, you know, play a series for a week. But anyway, I just, you know, I don't want it counting in playoff stats. I don't want what the Twins are getting credit for now to get the credit for going from 103 losses to the postseason the way they are, because to me, this isn't really the postseason. It may be postseason, but it isn't playoffs. Maybe we should distinguish between those two terms and stop making them synonymous.
Yeah.
It's not postseason or playoffs. It's there's playoffs, and then there's the postseason,
yeah,
in which you got a chance to play one more game after the season, particularly for teams that lose. You know, how do you say, well, we made the playoffs. You lost. You got 9 more innings.
We Indians fans have that conundrum every time 2013 comes up.
What's that, Jim?
We Indians fans have that conundrum whenever in the future you talk about the 2013 season.
Right.
Does that count as a playoff appearance?
And as Kenny Lofton said at the time, Kenny Lofton said, no way. This is not the playoffs. You got a postseason game, but it wasn't the playoffs because you didn't even win to get into a series to be in a. I agree with Kenny Lofton wholeheartedly. He said to be in the playoffs, you have to play in a playoff series. So, you know, and you're right. That's something that we'll always think about. To me, there's a difference between postseason and playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
That's right, Coach Mora. No, neither the Twins nor the Yankees as of tonight are in the
playoffs.
Not at all. But whoever wins will be advancing to a
playoffs
series starting on Thursday.
You know, that's an interesting side note, too,
yeah,
because when, you know, when it's all said and done and you're looking back, this, does the wild card game count as, you know, does my team get to still count as a playoff merit? At the end of the day, when you're looking back, you're only talking about the two teams in each season that lose that game, because the winner obviously at least goes on to the division series, if not farther. So in a looking back on it, this question is really for like the 2013 Indians. Do we as Indians fans consider that a playoff season? All technically, all the stats and the little markings at the ballpark say yes, but then you enter in this discussion, which is moot if you at least move past this game.
Exactly. So the team that loses this 9-inning postseason affair, to me, they did not make the playoffs. They lost a chance to get into the playoffs. That's the bottom line. They had a chance to get into the playoffs with a one gamer. They didn't make it, so your season ended. That's just it. Okay, speaking of playoffs and speaking of, you know, I mentioned Michael Brantley and questioning Terry Francona's, well, not really questioning it, but just saying it's a curious decision to have a guy who's only going to be able to be a pinch hitter. He cannot contribute in the outfield. He cannot play on a regular basis and get 4 ABs a game at this stage anyway of his recovery. But it makes me want to kind of run down a little bit through the Indians' rotation. I mentioned Trevor Bauer a few minutes ago is going to get the start in game number 1. Not just the rotation, the roster, I should say. Trevor Bauer gets game one on Thursday at Progressive Field. Corey Kluber, the should-be, would-be, could-be, maybe AL Cy Young Award winner who won the Pitcher of the Month Award again in October. He'll go in game two on Friday. Carlos Carrasco won't go until game three on Sunday, and then Josh Tomlin, for reasons I don't understand, will start game four on Monday. Now, a couple of points about that before I go into the rest of the roster, the baseball, or the 25-man roster that the Indians have released. Carlos Carrasco last started a game on Friday. He was lights out. 14 strikeouts, a single walk, seven, I think, shutout innings, or was it eight? So it was close to that. Just tremendous. Just putting a cap on a remarkable season for Carrasco. 18-6 on the season, an ERA of 3.29. He is just, I mean, he's a second ace, is what he is. He's a second ace in, on this roster, which is why probably they should be considered the favorite in the American League. He last pitched on Friday. He will not pitch again until this following Sunday. Now, this might fly in the face of the argument I was just making about, well, hey, you know, if you win, you get to sit all week. But to me, that isn't the way it is now, and I don't like the fact that Carrasco is going to be pitching on his 10th day, from making his last start, which was on Friday. That's a problem for me. That's an awful lot of rest. Kluber gets a little bit more rest than he would ordinarily because he started on Saturday and going until Thursday, but it's only by a day. Why is Tito going with Bauer in game one and then having Bauer be the go-to guy again if need be in a game five instead of a Kluber or a Carrasco when you have two aces, which is what I believe both of them to be? I don't understand that reasoning by Terry Francona. Here's what he said before the workout today. We're going to start out with Trevor in game one, Carrasco, Kluber in game two, Carrasco in game three, Tomlin in game four. Saying that, we've gotten a little creative with our roster, so Tomlin will be available in the bullpen for the first couple of games so the game four starter could change, he said. Then Trevor could be available later in the series as a starter or a reliever. We're trying to get as much flexibility as we can. Number one, you want to try to win every game. Number two, you don't know about whether this time of the year. End quote. So that's his explanation for why he's doing this, because he wants to be able to use Bauer in either a starter or a bullpen role later in the series. He could not do that with Kluber. And he wants to do the same thing with Tomlin early in the series, possibly using him in the bullpen and then changing the starter for game four, which could be, who knows, then a Clevinger or a Salazar. He said Kluber starting game two to keep him on his regular five. Wait a minute, I thought that gave him an extra one. Saturday, then rest Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess that would be his fifth game. So he's still on his regular rotation is Corey Kluber. But Kluber started Saturday against the Sox, would have been his normal rest for game one on Thursday. Oh, hold on a second.
Kluber's getting an extra Francona's day.
Wrong, then.
Yeah, Kluber's getting an extra day by going in game two.
That's what I said 5 minutes ago. He's getting an extra
right.
day's rest, right?
Yes, that was the correct part. He's by putting him in game two, Kluber is getting an extra day's rest. He would be on normal rest, i.e., every
right,
fifth day for a game five.
So Francona basically said something that was not true. I don't want to call him a liar. I mean, I'm reading from the Cleveland media notes from talking to Kluber or talking to Francona today before the workout. Francona said Kluber is starting game two to keep him on his regular 5 days rest. But then the reporter notes, but Kluber, who started Saturday, would have been on his normal rest for game one on Thursday, which is what I thought. Kluber, by starting game two, would be on regular rest for game five if needed.
Yep.
Or he would still be ready to start game one in the ALCS if the Indians advance without the ALDS going the distance.
Yes.
So there's a lot of considerations there. All right. Now I want to get to the rest of the roster because this is big. There are three relievers, Jim, that you pointed out to me when we were off the air. Nick Goody, Dan Otero, and Zach McAllister, who did an awful lot of work for the Indians in the bullpen this regular season.
Granted, that was the when it's tied or losing situations, as all bullpens have, but just look at all three of their numbers if you're curious. All of them have three ERAs under three.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They all did extraordinarily good work. Sub 3.00 ERAs for those three guys, you would think would make them have some value in this postseason. But instead of three relievers who have spent their entire season in that pen doing that heavy work, that heavy lifting, and doing it very successfully, he saved a spot on in that bullpen for Danny Salazar, who has been anything but consistent in any role that he has had. As a starter or coming out of the bullpen, extraordinarily minimal amount of opportunities there. I don't understand how Danny Salazar makes this postseason roster and Goody Otero and McAllister don't. How does one of them not have that spot? I don't like it. I don't like it even a little bit. Secondly, if you look at that bullpen, you also see the name of Mike Clevinger. And the reason you see him in the bullpen is because if you look at the rotation, you see Josh Tomlin as a fourth starter, and I've been saying this for two or three weeks now. Mike Clevinger has been straight up nasty, filthy as a starter on this team this season. He has earned that fourth starting spot. He went 12-6 in 24 starts, I want to say. No, 21 starts. He went 12-6 in 21 starts with an ERA that was better than Carlos Carrasco's. Believe that or not. An ERA that was better than Carrasco's. And for some reason, it seems to be off of my page now. But his ERA was, I want to say, somewhere right around 3.1 because Carrasco was at 3.29. I just cannot seem to find Clevinger's full ERA stats now. Oh, here's 3.11. I was right. 3.11. I was right. I found it. So he was 12-6 with a 3.11. He was just terrific as a starter. Tomlin, first of all, injury. Second of all, really, really weak in the first half when he was starting. Josh Tomlin still has the propensity to give up that long ball. And Tomlin gets the start with his 10-9 record and his season ERA of 4.98. I don't see how Tomlin gets that start instead of Clevinger.
And
unless this is all part of Francona's master plan that we just discussed,
yeah,
to have Salazar or Clevinger be available potentially to start if he decides to use Tomlin in the bullpen early on in the series.
Which, by the way, I would disagree with that last notation thoroughly. I mean, out of Tomlin, Salazar, and Clevinger, if you're ever going to have to use any of them out of the pen, Tomlin would be the last guy I would do with. At least Salazar and Clevinger have, you know, harder stuff for coming out of the bullpen,
yeah,
you know, in that situation. One other thing real quick.
That's a good point.
The bullpen stuff you're talking about with Salazar and Clevinger in there and Goody Otero McAllister out, because of that alignment, the vaunted bullpen of the Indians, statistically
the best in all of Major League Baseball,
you're really only, you know, I'm not even almost counting Clevinger and Tomlin. I know, I kind of understand, I think, how Tito's going to use them. But in all actuality, the five true bullpen arms, and yeah, it's only five. Miller, Allen, Shaw, the acquired Joe Smith, and the other lefty, Tyler Olson, and his zero ERA. There's only five true bullpen guys. I don't like that at all.
I don't like that at all,
where, especially the playoffs where, okay, yeah, Kluber, Kresge, you don't have to go the eight. Just give me five or six. We'll bring in the bullpen. That's how it usually works in the postseason. So to only have five true bullpen relievers, that could come back to bite
this
in the wrong way.
This is the obligatory moment when I say that Terry Francona has forgotten more baseball than I will ever know in 10 lifetimes. And it's true. He has. I'm sure this is the right thing to do because Terry says it is. He's the one with the rings. He's the one with the back-to-back division championships. He was in the World Series last year, and not me. So this is probably the right thing. But sitting here on the outside looking in as a baseball fan for you know, more than four decades and as an analyst for the last two decades, watching this very closely and talking to some people inside baseball, from which I, you know, gather my statistics and my information to develop my own opinions. I don't like it. I'm sure it's right. He's Terry Francona. I'm not. So I'm sure he's right and I'm wrong. I just can't figure out how that is right now. I can't figure out how he's right and I'm wrong right now. I'm sure it'll play out starting on Thursday and going through this series, whoever it may be against. But I for right now, I'm on the record as saying I don't like it. All right, it's 4 o'clock. If you're on hold, stay there. I'll try to come to you as quickly as I can after the top of the hour, right before we talk to Chris Cotillo of MLBDailyDish.com for more on the baseball play-in game tonight. Don't forget, coming up at 4:40, Mike Jinks, Bowling Green head coach, will join us to talk about BG's 0-5 season to date. They got off to a bad start in the MAC with a loss to Akron. They got Miami on the road this week, so we'll hear from Coach Jinks. And a reminder to you also, don't forget to be listening all day long to The Ticket for your chance at $1,000 four times a day. It's the 4K a day. Listen at 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for a keyword. Then text that keyword to 62582. Write that down. Save it on your phone. 62582 for a chance at a grand four times a day. It's the 4K a day only from ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, and we're right back after this.
Despite the penalties and the sacks, they arrive tonight 3-0. There goes Hunt, battling for every inch, and finally wrestled to the ground by Monte Nicholson.
That was a good defense we faced today, and honestly, we got a bunch of guys injured up front. Those guys up front still, you know, fought. They made some lanes for me, and I give them all the respect in the world just being able to help me finish the game off.
Our game is so unpredictable on how it's going to potentially unfold. Obviously, a guy like Irvin, you're optimistic about how that he can get you at least until the middle innings and in a position to challenge to win the game. Not something I really feel I can predict. If he's pitching well and, you know, we're looking at fifth, sixth inning and he's still rolling, you're going to probably give him an opportunity to keep going. But it, obviously, in a one-game scenario, he might be a little quicker than normal, knowing that you have fresh arms and we're late in the season and he's 210 innings into the, you know, the season. So you try to prepare as many scenarios as you can. We're just going to have to see what happens once the game begins.
I think we've played some of our best baseball in the month of September. We've pitched well. We've swung the bats well. We've run the bases well. Our defense has been good. So, to me, I feel good about going in. It's a one-game playoff. You know, it really is going to come down to execution of pitches and defense, putting a good swing on a baseball. You know, there's two teams that are going to fight like heck. One of us is not going to move on, but I really like the way we've been playing.
We're just going to try to treat it like we have the whole season. You know, coming here, we've played well at home. And I think once, you know, Seve throws that first pitch and we get the game rolling, I think everything will be the same. You know, I think all the build up before the game will be a little bit more nerve-wracking. But I think once you step out there on that field, it's still the same game we've been playing since we were little kids. You know, and we're just going to go out there and just keep competing, keep having fun, and go out there and try to win a ball game.
You can't make mistakes in these games. One little mistake will cost you. And the second thing is have some poise. Your heart rate's going to be up. It's going to be, and there's a lot of build up leading up to the game. It literally is. Is like a game seven, one shot at it, anything goes. There's gonna be a lot of chaos. If one guy gives up a run or starts walking some guys, they're gonna go to the bullpen early. Different rosters, it's definitely chaotic.
They've outscored every team in the major leagues from August the 5th on, so they have been a really good offensive team. And from August the 8th on, they've hit more home runs than anybody in the major leagues. When you look at the Twins, their outfield defense is sensational. Their whole defense is demonstrably better than it was at this time last year. And when they run and get it in the outfield, and then they hit a ball over the fence once in a while, they are a very difficult team.
Well, the stuff you have to give to Severino, the experience you have to give to Santana, especially in postseason play. Santana has had numerous postseason outings, a lot of them against New York. Unfortunately for him, they've always been on the losing route, but the experience, Santana, the stuff, Severino.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, rolling onward now. It's 4:14. Thanks for joining us. Who you got? You got the experience or do you got the stuff? Twins, Yankees, play-in game tonight. That's right, it's a play-in game, and that is how we're going to start our next conversation about the baseball playoffs with Chris Cotillo joining us once again from MLB's DailyDish.com. Chris, how you doing this afternoon, my man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Chris, I don't like the playoff moniker for this. I never have. In a season of 162 games, all of which were played in series, either three-game or four-game series, to play one nine-inning contest to and say you're in the postseason or you're in the playoffs, to me, is completely misleading. Are these teams, in your opinion, Chris, in the playoffs tonight, or is this a play-in game to get to an actual playoff series?
They're postseason teams. You know what? They celebrated with champagne in September when they clinched, so I'm going to say that they are postseason teams. They are wild cards.
Yeah, but that's just because they're all a bunch of drunks. They just wanted the champagne and beer bath. That is, I mean, in all seriousness, right? I mean, have you ever heard of anything as insane as that? A season that is this long, 162 games, we're going to settle who goes into the actual first playoff round with just a 1 9-inning contest. I mean, like I said, it just strikes me as being the, you know, 65th and 66th best teams in college basketball. We're going to give you a chance to play in to the actual tournament. You got a play in opportunity here. I mean, you know, baseball is not a sport of, you know, it's not a game of one game matches. It's a game of series. It always has been.
I do see that point, and I think it's really that kind of idea has grown this year more than we've ever seen before. People not liking it. I will say, you know, it does give. It is tough to look at, you know, the Yankees and the Diamondbacks and not think that they deserve an automatic spot in the division series, but it does reward a couple other teams, the Rockies and the Twins, two upstart teams that no one really expected to go far to give them a chance. And in a normal year without this second wild card, they wouldn't have that chance. I think we'll probably head to something where we have a three-game playoff sometime probably in the near future. And I always think we might see the division series expand into a seven-game set. So they're always looking to tinker with things. And I think there's a lot of complaints this year about this one-game playoff. I personally find it an extremely exciting way to start the postseason. We have a game seven tonight. We have a game seven tomorrow before we start the division series, basically. So you see a lot of aces are going. You know, Severino is going to go tonight, Santana, Greinke tomorrow. So you're seeing the team's absolute best and some really interesting decisions in what effectively become game sevens. And that really, for a lot of casual fans, get people into October really early in the process.
I don't say this disrespectfully at all, but if that was the mindset, why not just have a one-gamer with Sale versus Verlander and then make it a game seven in just a one-gamer? Why are we bothering with the formalities of of a best four out of seven? Just have that incredible excitement of one game between the two of the best pitchers in baseball. Why not just have Kluber against whoever it is that the Yankees would throw up there in a certain circumstance like that, and one-gamer?
You're rewarding the teams that have won the division. You know, it gives an added incentive to winning that division during the season. They're really emphasizing that. The wild card teams are in a secondary class, but they get the opportunity to, you know, if you really want to go for the division and avoid this one gamer, then if you play well enough, you will. I think that's a big piece of it. And I don't really have as much of a problem with this one game playoff as a lot of people, but as I said, it is a growing sentiment throughout a lot of minds, and I think they could change it.
And I hope you're right, by the way, that they do. That they do go to at least to a best of three, you know, like they used to have in the NBA, the old miniseries, best two out of three miniseries. I would really, really like that. Then I would call it a playoffs. Because to me, if you make nine extra innings at the end of your season and now you're going home, to me, you haven't really made the playoffs because you didn't get to participate in a series. We're talking to Chris Cotillo, MLBDailyDish.com, American League playoff game tonight, or play-in game if I have my druthers, between the Twins and the Yankees. Tomorrow it'll be the Rockies and the D-backs. And Jim Cushion's got a quick question for you here right now, Chris.
And it's on that Rockies-D-backs game tomorrow, because even though it's not as stark as 2 years ago in 2015, here we are with another scenario where one of the strongest divisions in all baseball, that National League West, which has three of the playoff teams, by the time you get down to the NLCS, we'll just have one of them left standing. We're talking about some possible changes, you know, with this game itself, but here's a change they really need to do. If this kind of lineup happens again where the wild cards are from the same division and they would play a team from the same division, shouldn't they move that? Because remember how bad it was a couple years ago? I think it was 2015 when you had Cardinals, Cubs, Pirates, and only one of them could come out of all of that. Same thing has happened this year. Couldn't they at least make that change, and should they?
It's a tough one to make because you're trying to reward that team with the best record. There's now just an added incentive to regular season performance, not just winning the division, but having the best record for, you know, not only home field within your own league, but now home field in the World Series as well. We've seen the All-Star game not matter anymore in regards to that. So, you know, the Dodgers are rewarded by playing the team that comes out of the wild card, you know, and that's, I think, very interesting this year, just because I think a lot of people think the Diamondbacks are, you know, maybe the second best team in the entire league, if not the third best, with Washington. I think a lot of people put them above the Cubs. It really adds some drama to the division series, in my opinion, just because, you know, it becomes, I guess, it really a division series with two teams from the same division. No matter who wins tonight, you're looking at, you know, an Arizona team that did have a better record than the Cubs. The fact that they have to play a one-game playoff is a little weird. I agree with that, especially against a team in its own division. So you know what? It's going to be an imperfect system no matter what. I think you're going to look at, they're going to look at maybe buys, something like the NFL or something to expand the series in the future. It's just, you know, it's an imperfect system when you have an odd number of teams coming out of each league, but I do like that it gives a chance for, you know, teams like the Brewers, the Cardinals, the Rockies to be in it and fighting for a spot down the stretch when in years past things would have been wrapped up, you know, a week earlier. So, to me, the division thing, I agree, is a little bit weird, but, you know, it shows two teams that, you know, get to have probably not been, you know, they're not big markets, Colorado and Arizona. They're out in the NL West. It doesn't get that much attention. They get to be on the big stage for one night going against each other.
We're talking to Chris Cotillo of MLBDailyDish.com, previewing the Major League Baseball play-in game. Starting tonight, it is the American League, and it is the Twins, and it is the Yankees. Twins are a really amazing success story, whether you call it play-in or playoff, going from 103 losses to being here and an opportunity to go to the division series if they win tonight is really an incredible thing. And really, you don't even have to go back that far. On August 1st, they were three games below 500. 2 months to play, they're three games under 500, and somehow they managed to find their way to at least this juncture on the verge of going into the division series. Do they, the upstart, you know, lovable, what an amazing turnaround story, Twins, ride that? Or does this dream get squashed in Yankee Stadium? This is still the New York Yankees. This is still postseason baseball in the Bronx, and it might not be the Yankees of old, but they added a lot of pieces at the trading deadline to make sure that they could be in this position. Who do you have tonight, Chris?
I think it's very interesting when you look back at that trade deadline, which I would consider, you know, the most important pivotal moment in the season. You look at, you know, the Yankees were very aggressive buyers going out and getting Todd Frazier, Tommy Canley, David Robertson, and then Sonny Gray and Jaime Garcia. They get Jaime Garcia from a team that decided to sell, and look who that was, the Minnesota Twins. They sold Jaime Garcia and Brandon Kinsler, an all-star closer, is going to be, you know, in this postseason as a member of the Nationals. So for the Twins to make that decision to sell and still come out of this as, you know, a postseason team, whether you agree with that label or not, is very, very impressive. Shows the players believed in themselves, you know, more than the front office did. I will go with the Yankees tonight just because I think, you know, Severino has established himself as a very consistent guy, a guy who the Yankees have been trying to slot into that ace role for a couple of years and had high hopes, and now they're finally doing it. So, you know, I will go with them. They're big favorites, especially with Miguel Sano not able to play tonight, not even on the roster for the Twins. But anything can happen in a nine-inning game. The Twins could sneak in and then play yet another divisional matchup there with the Indians and the DS. I think if I had to make a pick, the Yankees tonight, the Diamondbacks tomorrow, kind of go with chalk, but we've seen in previous years some teams can go in and steal a game and then make some runs. So that's kind of what makes it exciting on my end.
How long of a leash you think Girardi has for Severino, given not just who he is, but what kind of a bullpen that he's got? I mean, he's got a tremendous, kind of like the Indians do. Well, they did, and I'll ask you about that in a moment. But he's got, you know, obviously all of his arms fresh and some real, real power pitchers in that bullpen. If Severino gets in trouble in the fourth or fifth, do you think he goes early to make that move?
Obviously, you know, you have to have a short leash in this game. And I think, you know, the Yankees gave themselves a little bit, even more breathing room today, putting a couple guys, you know, on the roster that you wouldn't have necessarily expected. Sonny Gray, C.C. Sabathia make the roster behind Severino as starting options that can pitch situationally, stuff like that. So they have not only a great bullpen with some of the additions they made at the deadline to go with some of the other guys they have. There's a lot of options, and I think in these types of situations, you have to have a short leash, especially when you have other starters on the roster.
I don't disagree with that at all. I want to shift gears to the DS that we already know, the matchup between the Red Sox and the Astros, and it's going to be really a fantastic game one with Chris Sale and Justin Verlander, who found the fountain of youth, if you will, the new location. Not that he was pitching terribly in Detroit toward the end. He was actually kind of ramping up a little bit. But, my goodness, he has been just dominant since the trade to the Astros. Who do you like in that series? The Astros had been the team in the American League literally all season long until the Indians went on their streak and then passed them for the best record. But the Red Sox, you know, have a very, very forceful rotation and lineup as well. Who do you like in that series?
Yeah, there's questions after the top two for both clubs, you know, for the Red Sox. You know, you would have expected heading into this year, you know, if you would have expected anything, you would have had Sale, Porcello, and Price be the top three. You know, you're seeing Sale and Pomeranz and You know, some talk about Doug Fister, who getting the third start, which is a little bit wild, or Eduardo Rodriguez, maybe Porcello. So David Price moving to the bullpen, being that kind of Swiss Army knife, I think is going to be a really interesting storyline as the series develops. I think, you know, Houston with home field does have the edge. Verlander and Keuchel as a 1-2 punch is a, you know, a ready-lefty mix that you really like in the postseason. Three of the four starters for the first two games in this are lefties, which is pretty interesting. I think, you know, I'd have to go with Houston, just with that home field advantage and the way Verlander's been pitching. You know, Verlander was thought of, as a lot of people, as a bona fide number three when they were talking about him in July behind Keuchel and McCullers, and now, you know, he gets the game one start. That veteran guy who's obviously been there before and pitched in big games, I think, will probably be tough to beat Chris Sale, despite how Sale struggled a little bit. But, you know, it's one of those classic October pitching matchups like we're going to see throughout the month, and a series that, you know, really could go either way.
Are the Indians the favorite to come out of the American League when it's all said and done, or does this first-round matchup matter? For example, if it's the Twins or the Yankees, do you see them somehow knocking them off before they get to the ALCS?
Yeah, I obviously think the Yankees are a little bit of a stronger team, but the Indians, you know, are probably the favorite. They're kind of the hot World Series pick right now. Just, you got hot really when you needed to in September. You know, as you guys know better than anybody, and they really, you know, established themselves as well as Houston has played, and as well as they were able to do with Verlander. Cleveland's been consistent. They have their horses back. You know, when you have that many, that deep of a rotation, and you can start Trevor Bauer in game one and save Kluber for potentially 2 and 5, I think that is really impressive. And throw in Carrasco and Tomlin at 3 and 4. That's the kind of mix that, you know, can win a championship for sure. The Dodgers are going to be tough to beat. The Nationals, I think, are going to be tough to beat. But Cleveland, I think, is established as one of the favorites, if not the favorite in the entire league.
Chris, briefly on the playoff roster announced by Francona earlier today. The obligatory statement is he knows a hell of a lot more about baseball than I do. He's forgotten more in a day than I will know in 10 lifetimes. I acknowledge that. I'm sure he's right and I'm wrong. But having said that, I don't like some of the things I see on this roster. What do you make of him in the rotation, for example, keeping Danny Salazar, who has pitched very, very little in the bullpen and has been very, very inconsistent in whatever capacity has pitched all season, place of three guys who have been mainstays in the best bullpen in all of baseball? And I'm talking about Nick Goody, Dan Otero, and Zach McAllister. All three in their bullpen roles have sub-3 ERAs. None of them made this made this bullpen. Salazar did. And Mike Clevinger did, which is the other half of my problem here. Clevinger, in 21 starts, had a 12-6 record with an ERA of 3.11 compared to Tomlin's 4.98. Tomlin becomes the fourth starter. So he's really monkeying around with his bullpen here, which was the best in baseball, by placing two non-relievers among his seven-man bullpen. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's definitely an unorthodox move. I think you have to trust Francona, a multiple, you know, World Series champion in Boston. We got there last year. But, you know, at the same time, we're seeing teams really like to have guys who can be, you know, give you length immediately. You know, if a guy gets in trouble, you can put him in the third inning, fourth inning. And having starters like that is very useful. You know, the Clevinger-Tomlin move is a little bit surprising, but you'll have Tomlin available in the bullpen for games 1 through 3 as well. I think they have a lot of weapons, a lot of arms. It's about how they mix and match. You're going to see Miller at unique times. You're going to see some of these guys, you know, get in there at times where you're not used to seeing them, just like we saw a year ago, and it worked then. So, you know, and it's kind of, you know, I'm a Patriots fan. I always say in Belichick we trust. I think you have to look at it as Indians fan, and Tito we trust. He knows what he's doing. His management of the bullpen last year was very strong, and I expect it to be the same again in 2017.
Chris Cotillo, last thing before you go, we appreciate it. Follow Chris online at MLBDailyDish.com. Read his work there. What about the National League game tomorrow? I think you said you're going to go chalk. But let's just go ahead and go to the entire National League since it's the last question. Who's the favorite going into this postseason in the other comeout?
Yeah, I think a lot of people like the Dodgers. They got hot there at the end again, winning 8 of their last 10. I think, you know, it's tough to say an 104-win team is not the favorite, but the Nationals, I think, have a really strong chance. You know, Scherzer at full strength with Strasburg and Gio is very tough to beat, you know, like I've said before. So I think the Nationals are a very strong bet to beat the Cubs, though the Cubs know how to win. To me, the National League is just full of studs. They went chalk in the regular season, just as the American League did. But, you know, those three teams plus Arizona, to me, I think anybody could take the league down. But I would really say Washington is my team that I really like. Very strong lineup, strong rotation. If Bryce Harper's back and healthy, I think, you know, they're tough, and they're going to break that curse of being a D.C. team who can't get out of the first round of the playoffs.
All right, very good stuff. Chris Cotillo, find him online at MLBDailyDish.com. Chris, always a pleasure talking baseball with you. I'm still going to call it play-ins until they make it a three-game series, but I respect the points that you made about it. Thank you, my man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Have a good one. All right, it's 4:31. You know what that means, right? It's this time of the day that we give you another opportunity to qualify for the Tickets European Vacation. That's right. Once again, a chance to fly to one of six European destinations from Toledo Express Airport via Charlotte, North Carolina. And all you've got to do is be caller number 5 right now to 866-240-1065, and you'll be qualified for that grand prize drawing, which will be made on Monday, October 9th. You can qualify every day the rest of this week at about this time, or you can register one time at 1065theticket.com. It's from Toledo Express Airport, Toledo Port Authority, American Airlines, and Toledo's sports leader, ESPN 1065 The Ticket. So good luck to you. All right. Going back to the issue of the play-in versus the playoff, I think the bottom line is, as I said before, in a football season that is only 16 games long, you can have one playoff game to determine whether or not you go home or you advance. It makes sense. But you start playing 82 games the way they do in the NBA, you don't have a one-gamer to advance or go home. You have a series because you've played a ton of basketball all season long. You don't go home on one day in 48 minutes. And in baseball, where it's double that, 82, just about 262, you don't go home after 9 innings. You don't decide if you advance after 9 innings. It's got to be a series, even if it's just best 2 games out of 3. I'm glad, because I did not know this, I'm glad to hear Chris Cotillo of MLBDailyDish.com say that he's heard more grumbling and rumbling about this this year than really in any year past about these one-game playoffs. A lot of people don't like it. I hope that it's a lot of people in positions of power and authority so that they will change that. He is kind of suspecting that this is starting to get a little bit louder, these complaints, and that, you know, at some point in the near future, not saying it'll be next year, but at some point in the near future, that this will be changed from a one gamer to a best 2 out of 3 for the wild card round. I hope that happens sooner rather than later. Then we can truly put to bed any questions or discussions about whether or not this was a play-in or a playoff. Okay, it's 4:33. Here's what I got. I've got bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way with Jim Cushlin. On the other side of that, we're going to shift gears and get back into college football. It has been a rough go for Mike Jinks. Bowling Green started the season in non-conference play 0-4. They finally got a chance to play a MAC game against Akron on Saturday. That one didn't go their way either, so they're 0-5 going to Oxford down there at the University of Miami coming up on Saturday. Mike Jinks is the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, and we will have him coming up here right after the bottom of the hour. Local Sports Center coming your way on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here. Time to talk some college football. The Bowling Green Falcons fell to Akron 34-23 to drop to 0-5 on the season. And still winless, of course, also in Mid-American Conference play. Back-and-forth game, turnover-filled game that Akron ended up winning in the end. And to help us talk all about what happened on the field and coming up for this Saturday's game at Miami, well, we once again welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, to the program. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
Good afternoon, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Before we get into some nitty-gritty on this game and then going forward and all that stuff, talk to me about the quarterback spot. Jarrett Dodge went out early. James Morgan came back in. A little bit of an injury there. What's his status and what's the quarterback status moving forward based on that?
We lost Jarrett on the second, third series of the game. Got a little bit of a back injury, and right now he's day-to-day questionable. Moving forward, at best, what I can tell you, it's not a season-ending injury. You know, that young man's got a lot of football ahead of him in the next 3 to 4 years. So we're going to be very patient and very cautious with him. Nothing structurally, nothing broken, but again, probably doubtful and questionable. So, for this ball game.
So it looks like it'll be James Morgan probably at least for this 1 week back starting.
Right, and really, you know, for the most part, I felt like the kid, you know, early in there in that first quarter, looked like he kind of pressed a little bit, but he kind of settled down in the second and third and really threw some big touchdown passes to get us back in the game. You know, we had the turnovers and got down 20-6, and he really made some plays that got us back in the game. We didn't not only tied it, but we took the lead at 23-20, and then, of course, weren't able to hang on to it, and then the one, an opportune play at the end of the game kind of really sealed it and crushed us there. But hated that for him because, really, like I said, he had played well enough for us to win the game up until that point because nobody prepares like that young man does.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons, who fell 34-23 to Akron, a turnover-filled game. Coach, and, you know, let's start right there. Seven total turnovers in the game, four of them, if I'm counting this right, yeah, four of them by your guys, couple interceptions, couple of fumbles. Boy, it's hard to win football games when you're turning over the ball like that.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Two of the turnovers led to 14 points, one on the pick six, one on the opening drive of the game. Off of first down, we had Daigie had a completion, and then we had a fumble up inside from one of our inside. I think it was Miller, Scotty Miller, our slot receivers. Can't do that and win football games, especially from your key guys. So those guys understand that. Nobody hurts more than them. Well, you got to step up. They've got to step up. It's my job to make sure we keep this team together and as one, and make sure that everybody keeps their eye on the prize and understand that there's seven opportunities still out there for us. The fact of the matter is, we let one get away this past week, and it would have been a great way to start conference play. Heck, they had just played Troy and should have won the game and lost 17-16 on the last play of the game, and Troy just beat LSU. There's parity in college football. So don't believe the outside noise out there. We're not the worst team in college football by any means. I guarantee you that. We will win games this year, stay together. And what happens in times like this and through adversity, you get to learn a lot about people. And that's what they're finding out the hard way. So we'll continue to fight. We'll continue to keep this football team together, and we'll win games this year.
And you know what, Coach, talking about learning things the hard way, and though it didn't translate into W in this one, as you point out, you guys down 20-6 at one point in the second quarter, get a later in the second quarter touchdown to make it a one-score game, and then you guys score the first 10 points of the third quarter to take a 23-20 lead. We'll get to what happened after that here in just a bit, but at least in that sequence, end of second quarter through halftime and that first part of the third quarter, that's resiliency, as far as I'm concerned, right there, to get yourselves back into the ball game playing well.
They showed a lot and the ability to do that, especially with a quarterback that hadn't taken the number one reps throughout the week. We had gone with Daigie as a starter. He had taken most of the number one reps. I was proud of that kid coming in because, again, the number one quarterback's going to get 70, and the number two guy's going to get 30. So he had to be mentally prepared to come in and even give us a chance to be successful. Without our best corner, Cameron Jeffries, last week. Clint Stevens, who's coming off an ACL injury, was thrust back in there and had to make plays, and he competed his tail off. We threw another true freshman, Darius Wortham, back into the mix. He played the nickel for us. He competed. He played well. We played 17 true freshmen, a redshirt freshman, in yesterday's game versus a senior heavy football team. Jim, we're doing things the right way. We're going to be successful. We asked the Falcon faithful to stay with us, to stay the course, we understand that it's us against the world right now, and that's the way we'll play the rest of this year.
We're talking with head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons, and that's a good point to lay out to fans, because you know the casual fan may look up, see 0-5, and go, oh my goodness, what the heck's going on? But you know, rebuilding the program, as we've talked about time and time again here on these interviews, playing a lot of these younger guys, a lot of these freshmen, as you just pointed out, in at least this game, and obviously more so far this season, it may have not translated into W so far, but they're getting that experience in live action, in game situations, and that is going to be beneficial down the line still, isn't it?
Hey, there's no doubt, Jim. And what people have got to understand is as you look, disappointed in this week's loss because, it was a good Akron team that we played, and we outgained them. You know what I mean? We played good special teams, and we had to stink in turnovers. And that's something we hadn't done all year, and that's something we've been focusing a ton on. So very, very disappointed in that. You know, the record is what it is. You look at our schedule, a lot of teams in the country that played that schedule wouldn't be sitting here at 3-1. I promise you that. You look at the MAC. You look at the Akron team we just played. They were 1-3 coming in, almost beating Troy, who just beat LSU. You look at the team we play this week. They're 2-3. One of their, they've already played a conference game, so they're non-conference game. They're 1-3, and they're picked to win the MAC. So, you know, due to how we have to schedule a non-conference play, that's a part of it. And as coaches, we get that. The casual fan doesn't understand that. We can't worry about that. We focus on our day-to-day business. We make sure that we're doing things the right way. We be sure, make sure that we're holding these kids accountable and we're helping them grow as young men. And that's what we're doing, and that's what our coaching staff will continue to do. And in that process, you build recruiting classes. You stack them so when you have a senior-heavy team or a bunch of upperclassmen, you can go into a Georgia Tech or you can go into a Maryland and you find a way to win and you can make a run in your conference play. So we're steady pushing forward, and we will continue to do those things.
Now let's talk about the going forward part, Coach. This Saturday on the road to Oxford playing Miami. That's a 1:30 pregame for a 2:30 kickoff. You can hear over on our talk radio 100.7. Talk to me a little bit about the Red Hawks.
Well, Chuck's done a great job. He's kind of gone through the same process that we're talking about right now. Had a couple rough years. Got himself a redshirt junior quarterback that's you know played for 3 years now, and he's making great decisions. They've got some skill. James Gardner is a big-time receiver, a 6'4", 215-pound kid that's an NFL prospect that, given a one-on-one situation, 50-50 balls, he's hard to handle. So we're going to have to be able to contain him. But Alonzo Smith and Kenny Young are two great backs, you know, that, you know, at the end of the day, everything goes through the quarterback. But to their core, they want to establish the run first. So we got to stop the run, and we got to find a way to handle Gardner. From a defensive standpoint, what you see is what you get. They're kind of vanilla, and sometimes those are the worst teams to play because they understand their technique and they believe in what they're doing. They usually got pretty good players playing there. And again, they've got a bunch of guys that have played a lot of football. So it was a great game with them last year. Down here was a shootout. We had a chance in the fourth quarter. We let it get away, and I expect a great one when we go to their place.
Best of luck, of course, as always, Coach. It's Miami on the road in Miami down in Oxford this Saturday, 1:30 pregame, 2:30 the kickoff time over on Talk Radio 100.7. That's where you can catch all the action. Coach, best of luck out there on Saturday, and let's hope we're talking some much more positive things when we reconvene next week.
Sure do appreciate you, Jim. You take care.
You too, Coach. Head Coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons taking a little bit of time talking with us here on the Extravaganza. It is a bummer, and I love the almost enthusiasm right there when Coach is saying, you know, the record is what it is, but this program is moving forward. It's going to win games. I love how declarative and I want to say stubborn. That's the wrong word here, but, you know, confidence that, yes, this team will win football games. And I know it looks bleak and understandably so for a lot of fans right now at 0-5. I mean, at the same token, as Coach also pointed out, record is right now what it is. The Bowling Green Falcons are still winless, 0-5. But they are not the worst team in the country. And, yeah, I imagine there was a little defensiveness in there, and that's totally understandable because you might see some of the rankings. There are some publications and things, ESPN, CBS, and others. They go through every team in college football. And if you look at the bottom, the very bottom of that list, depending on which publication you're viewing, you will see Bowling Green at or right near the bottom of teams in all of college football. And Coach is here to tell you, no, this is not, we are not the worst team in college football. That's just silly. We will win games, and you have to have that kind of confidence. I mean, you just do. You have to go back out there in the practice field, try to correct some things. I mean, not even bring up, for example, in this Akron loss, you know, the penalties brought up the fact that teams combined for 7 turnovers, 4 of them by the Falcons, didn't mention 8 more penalties for 77 yards. You clean up some of those things in just that Akron game, and that's a W, because this team was down 20-6, ended up coming back and having a 23-20 lead midway through the third quarter. Then more penalties and turnovers was the Achilles heel that brought down the Falcons at the end of this game. The game-winning score was a 38-yard interception return off of James Morgan midway through the fourth quarter. There were still 9 minutes to go in that game. There was still plenty of time down the stretch to try to get the points back in that particular game, but that put it up to 11. That's what changed the dynamics a little bit. So, you know, it is rough, and it does kind of suck right now when you're trying to think of the Bowling Green Falcons and things that are positive. I would say it's baby steps in a twisted way at this point. For example, one of the positives, as you heard, Coach, my very first question, Jarrett Dodge, the freshman who only went 6 of 9 for 14 yards, came out second or third series, as Coach pointed out. He had an interception, too, with a little bit of a back injury. The positive there, if you could take one, is it's not a season-ending thing. He's a day-to-day, most likely to question, doubtful to questionable, somewhere in that range. So don't expect him necessarily to play down in Oxford against Miami. But his season's not over, not by any stretch of the imagination. He could very well be back out in the field in 2 weeks when the Falcons return to the Doit to take on Ohio. Meantime, James Morgan, 17-28, 163, 2 touchdowns, the one pick. Yeah, the one pick was a giant one. It led to it was a pick six in that fourth quarter that gave the final margin of 34-23 for Akron over the Falcons in this one, but a decent game for him. I thought Cleveland ran the ball pretty well, 94 yards on 20 carries. That's a pretty decent day on the ground. It just when you're playing this many freshmen, too, and you heard Coach point out, we're playing a ton of freshmen. That means, A, they're going to make mistakes, but the flip side is they're going to get that experience on the field in game situations, and that's invaluable going forward. And when I say going forward, I don't just mean this week or the week after. I mean for their respective sophomore and junior years to come in the next two seasons. Yeah, it's not pleasant right now. We all understand that. But at the same time, there are some things going forward that this team will be able to do, and I believe Coach when he says that. I mean, that this team, will win games. I know it's hard to think of it right now. I mean, this is a team that's 0-5. You're losing to Akron. You're losing to South Dakota at home. Ohio is next, or in 2 weeks, Ohio, and that's the favorite to win the East. Then it's Northern Illinois, one of the teams possibly to win the West. Toledo, of course, later on. You got a Kent State, a Buffalo, and Eastern all on the road. So it's not the easiest of schedules either, considering the Falcons are 0-5. But I believe Coach when he says that there's going to be some wins amongst that. As I keep reminding everybody at the end of these little interviews that we have with head coach Mike Jinks every week, the Falcons were staring 1-11 in the face last year, rallied to win the last three games to finish a much more respectable looking 4-8, which, was an improvement considering where they were, say, early October, same type of time they are right now. So it's one of those things where it hurts right now, and it may hurt for the majority of the rest of this season, but I cannot believe that this team would be winless. They're not the worst team in college football. There's got to be a win or two somewhere along the schedule, and if you cut down on turnovers, cut down on mistakes, and have these freshmen, especially the freshmen, and guys like Dodge and others, keep getting more valuable experience on the field, and Dodge, of course, when he's back healthy, which should be for next week's game against Ohio. Again, Coach mentioned it was a back thing, but he's more of a day-to-day, so he will be back in the lineup at some point very soon, just probably not this Saturday at Miami. You're going to improve, as time goes on, and it's gonna hurt until then for Falcons fans. There's just no other way around it. And for all those, I've seen some Twitter and I've seen some other things, the process of starting to maybe wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and try to call for Mike Jinks. No, the coaching change right now is the dumbest thing that the Falcons could do. It's not that Mike Jinks is a bad coach. Far from it. It's a talent fluctuation thing. They're in the middle of a downturn right now, and the Falcons are one of the better programs in the history of this conference. They will be back. Pulling the plug on a guy like Mike Jinks right now, I think, would be, too soon. And so I'm very displeased to have seen some of that over the course of the weekend. There are some of you out there thinking, oh, maybe they should have replaced Mike Jinks. I just think that would be the absolute wrong move to go. It hurts now. It stinks now, and it may hurt and stink for the vast majority of the rest of the season, but that doesn't mean there's a giant dark cloud over the Falcons that's just going to hang there for a couple more years. This team will improve, and it'll be a much different conversation when we finally get to talk about the first Bowling Green Falcons win, which I am positive will happen, at some point in these next couple of weeks. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Mike Miller Drive Time coming at you next. And then a little bit later on tonight, we'll have the high school football forum with Bill Clark and the crew getting you ready for week 7 and recapping week 6 of the high school football season. That's tonight from 7 to 8. And then as soon as that's done, at 8 o'clock, the American League wild card game. Twins, Yankees from the Bronx. Winner gets the top-seeded 100-plus win Indians team. So the playoffs set to begin. We're going to be your home for the Major League Baseball playoffs up all the way right here on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Still hoping I can get some of those games over at Talk Radio 100.7 when there are conflicts. I'm still working out some of the bugs in that. I'm not an engineer, so I'm also trying not to blow up the station, you know, while I'm trying to figure things out. So hopefully I can bring that to you, but we are going to have a whole bunch of playoffs, and they'll start tonight with the American League wild card game here at 8 o'clock on the Ticket right after the high school football forum. So lots of fun stuff still to go here on this Tuesday. We're done here on the Extravaganza. The next fun thing, Drive Time. Mike Miller coming at you next. We'll talk to you tomorrow.